Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
本期节目由 AI 语音口语教练应用程序 Jam 赞助播出。Jam 是一款专门为非母语者打造的英语口语训练工具，每天只需一分钟，你就能通过随机话题进行即兴演讲。AI 教练 Jammy 会立刻帮你分析发音、语法、词汇和流利度，并给出更地道的表达示范。不论是出国留学、职场汇报，还是旅行交流，Jam 都能帮你快速提升口语自信。目前 Jam 正在官网推出特别活动，现在注册即可领取一个月免费会员，开启你的英语口语提升计划。领取地址 jamtalk.co/free jamtalk.co/free。 再重复一遍 jamtalk.co/free， 欢迎大家前往领取。你好，欢迎收听狗熊有话说 Bear Talk。 这期节目我们请到的嘉宾是独立开发者、全职创作者 Florin Pop。 如果你在网上见过那个百万美元网格的网站，就是1000个小格子，每填满一个就代表赚到1000美金，那就是他最初发起的这个简单又直观的点子，不仅火了，还激励了不少人去公开记录和分享自己的创业旅程。节目里我们聊到他从自由职业开发者到写播客、拍视频，再到全职独立黑客的转型故事。一路上他靠着学习、尝试、分享的循环，把兴趣变成了事业，也慢慢积累起观众和收入。比如他曾挑战在10小时内做完10个项目，结果视频爆红，直接让他的 YouTube 频道翻倍成长。后来他还创办并卖掉了自己的项目 I Code This， 这是他人生中第一次真正的退出。我们也聊到他设立的1000万美元挑战背后的逻辑，不是单纯追钱，而是为了财务自由，为了能更大胆的去探索和创造。他很坦诚地说，公开挑战带来了责任感和动力，但也伴随起伏和压力。与此同时，他用自己的方式提醒我们，实验、迭代、快速推出 MVP， 也就是最小可行产品，从社区获取反馈，这些才是独立创作者能走下去的关键。 Florin 的故事其实不仅是关于赚钱或开发项目，更是关于如何把好奇心和创造力当作人生的驱动力。听下来会让你觉得，原来边玩边试也能慢慢搭建出属于自己的事业。
Hi, folks, and welcome back to Bear Talk, the podcast about design, technology, and personal growth. A little while ago, I was on a trip, back home to China and decided to take a personal challenge. I wanted to see if I could, use just 20 hours to make $1,000. The goal was to get my hands back into design and building something from scratch. I completed the challenge. It was a success. And it was also a great experience that even inspired a few other people to try something similar. And then just a couple of weeks later, a friend of mine who worked at Google showed me his own project. He had created this amazing website to track his $1 million journey. It was a grid of 1,000 squares, with each one representing $1,000. Every time he made $1,000, he'd filled in a square and moved a little bit closer to his goal. I was instantly captivated. I thought, wow, that's such a brilliant and inspiring idea. So I was motivated to start my own version, build a web page with the same, similar layout, vibe coded. And when I asked my friend where he got the idea, he said he was inspired by a developer named Florin Pop. And that's why I'm so excited to have our guest on the show today. He's the original creator behind this viral $1 million grid concept. So today, we're talking to the man who inspired a movement, the indie hacker, and a full-time creator, Florin Pop. Hey, Florin.
Hey.
Welcome to the show, and thanks so much for joining us. How are you doing?
Thanks for having me. Very excited to be here. I'm good. I'm probably a bit cold. You can hear it from my voice, but I'm fine, mostly.
Yeah. I noticed there are a lot of medals behind you, and I saw your recent ex-post. You just completed a half marathon, or you do that regularly. Congrats on that, by the way.
Yeah, I've been running for several years now, but I took it more seriously after I turned 30. I kind of find it like a funny 30 midlife crisis where you kind of realize that your body is not as young anymore and you have to do something. So I started running like crazy. And bonus, me and my wife started going to running races, like competitions and stuff. And those are participation medals. Nothing very serious yet, but we're having fun. Actually, we were in Budapest last week, completed our first official half marathon. And yesterday we had a 10K run here in Sighișoara in Romania. And that was also very, very fun. So it's kind of fun to collect the medals. It's like collecting Pokemons, but like doing something healthy for your body.
Yeah, it's different themes, different color and style.
It depends really on the competition. Everyone has their own style and shape and everything. It's very fun.
What's your pace, if I can ask? Like, what's your regular, how long did you on the average complete a half marathon?
Last year I trained a lot. Started the year, I also got a coach. And last year, I beat all of my records. For half marathon, my record is 1 hour 35 minutes, I think.
Ooh, that's really good.
It was a lot. So last year, I ran 3,000 kilometers. I've been doing 70 kilometers a week, like for months. But then I slowed down a bit this year at the beginning, and it already shows. So it's crazy how quickly you can lose your training if you don't keep up. And now I'm kind of working to get back to that that shape I was last year. Also, one of my goals last year was to run a 5K under 20 minutes, and I did it. I'm super happy about that.
Yeah,
it was so tough. It was an experience. I mean, I've learned so much about myself during that run because I felt like I'm going to die. It was so hard. I had my coach, he paced me, and it was so tough, especially in the last like 20%. My brain started to panic and my body was going crazy. And at the end, my coach was like, you have to learn to calm yourself down, you know, because you push yourself so much, your brain started to panic and it doesn't know what's happening. So it kind of sends you all these signals to stop, you know. But if you realize that it's just for a period, because you're not going to die, you know. I mean, God forbid, might happen, but like not from, I mean, in most cases, it doesn't happen. If you can tell your body to calm down, it's just for a moment, and then push through, it's just, I mean, I learned so much about myself during that period. It felt like I went to a whole new level of like in a place where I realized how much more potential I have. You know? It was fun.
That's really cool. Yeah, because the reason I asked this question is about because I used to run a little bit. Took part a few marathons, but I'm like a total amateur. Like 2.5 hours to complete a half one. So yeah, it's almost like walking and slow running, jogging. So yeah, and the reason I asked is I'm curious. But now I find there might be some connections between the topic we're going to discuss, because it sounds like long run and like some resilience and improvement and also be patient. It seems there are connections, but maybe we can get back to that later. And before this show, before we hit the record button, we talk a little bit about your journey. Do you mind that you can repeat that or tell us a little bit of who you are and what did you do before your indie hacker journey and now?
Yeah, so sort of my career started in 2012 when I started programming. I did a bit of freelancing. I was in high school, in my last year of high school, and then I went to college to study programming and stuff. And I did freelancing on the side. Then I got a part-time job while in college. And then I went back to freelancing. And I learned a lot of things along the way. It was also fun because I started to make my own money. I didn't have to depend on my parents anymore for money. And that was very, very exciting. And then in 2017, I got my first full-time job as a React developer. It started to become popular back then. And the company hired me full-time remote. I was, I think, the only person in my area. Maybe they had like 3 people in the whole country to work in this company remote. So it was, remote work wasn't accepted during that time. But because I knew React and not a lot of people knew React in this company back then, they accepted me to work remotely, which was fun. So I did that for a couple, like 2 years. And it was good. The pay was very great, like especially for Romania. Developers here have a good salary compared to like other like jobs and stuff. But I didn't feel like I reached my potential, or I didn't feel like people kind of know who I am and what I'm doing. So on the side, I started blogging. And my mind was blown when one post of mine kind of went viral. I mean, not super viral, like millions, but like it was thousands, tens of thousands of people who read the article. And for me, that was wow. Like in my company, I was doing CSS and I was changing colors and positioning things. And that was good. But nobody really knew who was the person who did that. I mean, on the bigger scale. Sure, my team knew, but on the bigger scale, like the clients who went on the websites, they didn't know who I was making those design changes. But on the article I wrote, people knew that, hey, Florin Pop wrote this article. And that was very exciting. Kind of gave me some kind of a purpose. It kind of made me feel good, you know? So this was in the beginning of 2019, and I discussed with my wife. I said, hey, this is something interesting. Companies already started to reach out for me to write paid articles for them. First offer was $35 for an article, which is funny now to look back, but it was really excited to get paid for something I would do for free, you know? And then it went to $150 and then $500 and $1,000. And it kind of grew exponentially like that. And I was like, you know what? I want to quit my job and do this full time. But it was a bit tricky because I was the only one working. My wife was still in college. So it was kind of a gamble, you know, because I wasn't making as much as my full-time job with this kind of new side thing going on. So we kind of decided that, okay, let's wait till the end of the year, see what happens, and then we'll decide. The discussion was kind of in April. And in June, I was like, no, I don't want to do this anymore. I'll quit now. I'll quit now. And I quit my job and went full-time. I started by writing articles and I was also active on Twitter, created my account there. I was posting all sorts of things, engaging with the community. And at the end of the year, I started posting randomly on YouTube. It was just for fun. I wasn't very comfortable on camera and stuff like that. My accent was very bad. But I did it for fun, just like a small challenge. But then something happened. I got 1,000 subscribers and I was like, whoa, this is interesting. So at the beginning of 2020, I set a big goal to myself. I want to get 100,000 subscribers on YouTube. And for the next 3 months, I did everything I could think of to reach that goal. I started making dozens of videos a month. I think by end of March, I had like 200 videos and streams together. I did a bunch of challenges and I grew my channel to like 30,000 subscribers in a few months. And then in September, I had a viral video go super well and it doubled my channel to 70,000 subscribers.
Just one video,
it doubled my channel. Yeah, it was crazy. It was a challenge. I did 10 projects in 10 hours. I went live and built 10 projects in 10 hours. This was before AI, so I did everything manually. Now it's very easy to do with AI, but yeah. And the video went very well. It doubled my channel and I kind of realized that, wow, I'm not at 100,000 subscribers, but I kind of achieved my goal. It's just a matter of time because new subscribers were coming in every day. And yeah, shortly after, I think it was the next year in March or something like that, I got my play button for 100,000 subscribers on YouTube, which was very exciting. One of my, I think, I have it here. Let me show you. I have it here.
I'm so jealous.
This is one of
the milestone.
This is one of my greatest achievements, like professionally. It's very fun. So yeah, and since then I did many things. I also streamed a lot and did videos and wrote articles, and I started dabbling with indie hacking. I built my own project. Well, I built many projects, but one of them which went well was iCodeThis, which was a platform for developers to learn how to program by building projects. And that went really well. I ended up selling it at the beginning of the year. So I had my first exit. And I've been documenting my entire journey since. And during this time, I started my challenge to make $1 million while documenting everything, like all the income sources and sharing everything I'm learning along the way, just to get people inspired, get people motivated. And also, it's a way for me to track my progress, to look back in the future and say, and remember that, hey, look, I did that and I did that. It's very fun.
I have some questions about this journey and also like the topic about this $1 million challenge. That's because I'm also inspired by you, and that's why I have this conversation. But according to what you shared from what you've done before 2019 and even before COVID, right? So before AI, and there are some trending movement is happening, but quite similar as to what you've done a few years ago. A few questions that I have. The first one is that your first role is a developer working a corp environment, and then you move on. And seems to me that the first step you moved on from that role is to become a content creator or educator. But it's a little bit different from a developing role. And what was the plan, or what's your rationale at that time? I know the viral article is the seems that that's the positive feedback, right? You got you got that, and that's an evidence, and say, oh, I have some expected outcome if I go that direction. But what made you make that decision? Because it's more like a direction change of your career, right? So from a developer to a content creator / developer. I want to know that first.
I think looking back at it, I've been always like an explorer. I liked trying new things. For me, even blogging was something I found interesting and I did it. Then YouTube as well. I found it interesting and I did it. And even indie hacking as well. So along the way, I got kind of hooked in different things, which I found interesting. And I started working on it and started exploring, learning everything I could about it. And it wasn't like a big plan, to be honest. Even to this day, I don't know if is this saying going on, and I found it true, especially in my case. But most of the time, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just doing things, you know. I try to focus more on doing the things I enjoy, you know, things that I like learning a lot. I like experimenting and sharing what I'm learning with my audience. I found that throughout my journey of doing many things, these are the kind of the fundamentals. Like these are the pillar stones that I've been following, you know? So I like learning, I like experimenting and sharing what I'm doing. And of course, I can't like deny it. I like making money from different sources. I like to, because in my mind is this connection of if I'm doing something well, then it will make money eventually.
Yep.
My headphones going nuts.
That's a great answer because, learning, sharing, and also it seems that you find a sweet spot, like not only because you, in your previous role, it's making money. It's quite good.
Yeah.
Like you got decent money. But on this journey, like you follow your curiosity and learning and sharing and things, it seems that combine lots of things together. And that's, not everyone has that opportunity. So, I would say that it's really good and inspiring.
I have my doubts along the way because every time I start something new, I'm kind of new in the area and I have to figure out things. But then along the way, it's nice that during all these things, I kind of learn many things along the way. So I'm bringing all this knowledge with me in the new journey. Right. So, when I started indie hacking per se, like building projects to monetize them, I also had experience by being a developer, by being a content creator, by building networks. Like also I like connecting with people and forming groups and stuff like that. So all of those things that I learned from those experiences, I'm bringing to the next venture. And they're piling up.
Yeah. What could be the framework, if you have, or like the mindset for you to start a new domain or new territory? Like, for example, you start from developer and then content creator and indie hacker. And once you get into an unfamiliar area, is there any framework or mindset or like your approach to say, if I follow those steps, it should be work, or like I'm confident or it will be work later? Is there any approach that you use or framework you use?
I don't know if it's something exactly step by step that I follow, but it's more like a way of thinking, I guess. So when I'm entering a new field, my main, the first thing I do is go on YouTube and watch a ton of videos about the topic. And then I kind of break it down to see, okay, if I watch like 10 videos, who is who are the top 3 players in the area? Right. And then I kind of go deeper into watching what they say about what's their point of view. And I watch multiple creators, for example, just to get more multiple point of views on the same topic. Right. And the next step is to start doing something with the knowledge I get. Right. So, for example, indie hacking, I watch creators, I follow creators, I read what they write, I maybe even buy their courses or ebooks. Right. I get the knowledge. And then I try to apply what I'm learning by doing something, whatever it is, whatever idea I have, I start doing it. And another great thing that I've learned along the way is that if I do something and I talk about it, like I shared with my audience, I also get a new perspective because people who follow me, they also comment on it and then they give me different ideas or they kind of make me think of different challenges, right? And just the simple fact that I'm documenting the process, like it kind of makes my brain think more deeply about it because you're not just doing it. You have to tell people how you did it, right? So you kind of have to go outside a bit of the topic and see it from outside, like to get people to understand what you're doing, right? So that gives you a new direction, a new like maybe not direction is the right word, but like a new perspective, right? You yes. go out of the, of being too focused into the main subject. So yeah, that's kind of what I noticed. This kind of pattern emerges over and over.
Mm. Yeah, that's awesome. Because I noticed that I'm also doing some similar stuff, like absorb what other people's commented, and also that kind of like a fuel that I can use for later, and also could be some insight that I can get. But yeah, quite similar. Let's talk about the $1 million challenge. What's inspired you to start this journey? You know, you mentioned that you started 10 projects in 10 hours. And,
yeah.
Sorry, 10 days or 10 hours? 10 hours.
Yeah, 10 right? hours, yeah.
Wow, yeah. So is that connected or like an upgrade to that? Or like, yeah, what's the story behind it?
Yeah, I've noticed that I'm very ambitious when I set myself goals. And I set myself crazy challenges. Even that video of 10 projects in 10 hours, it was a challenge and I was very excited to do it. So I completed my challenge to get 100,000 subscribers. I completed my challenge to build projects in X hours and days and stuff like that. I did several of those. I completed, like, back in 2017, I think, I ran every day for over a year. So that was another challenge. And I saw that I'm kind of motivated by challenges like this. So when I was 27 years old, I had exactly 1,000 days until my 30th birthday. And then, I mean, I had a bit more, so 1,000 and something, when this idea came to my mind. I'm going to have 1,000 days. Could I make $1 million in 1,000 days? So 1,000 per day for 3 years or some. Yes, 3 years, almost 3 years. And that's the first time I kind of set this goal to make $1 million. Now, why $1 million? That's the big question. $1 million because I'm also into finance and stuff. I like to crunch numbers. I like to write down our expenses, write down our incomes, have charts and investments and all of that. I really like playing with numbers like that. And after studying about financial independence, there's a formula there that if you have invested an amount of money, the formula is the other way around. So you have to know how much money you spend per month, then multiply that by 12 to know how much you spend per year, and then multiply that by 20, I think it is. 25. Yeah, it's 25. And that's the amount of money you need to have invested so that you can safely withdraw 4% every year and you have pretty much infinite money because the money grows by 8% and you only withdraw 4% and it grows with inflation. So you can kind of have infinite money. So after doing this calculation, it's called the
FIRE. Movement.
Yeah, it's the FIRE movement, and they have this calculation of 4% safe withdrawal rate. So you need to know how much your expenses are, and you can calculate the amount. And for me, back then, we had like $2,000 of expenses. Like, we could live a good life with $2,000. Now, it's not $3,000 anymore, but that's another story. And 3,000 times 12 was 36,000, and times 25, let me quickly do it because I forgot, it was $900,000. So that's the amount of money we needed to have invested so we could basically live on forever, be financially independent. So $900,000. Okay, let's round it up to $1 million. That's how I came to this number of $1 million. If I have this money invested, I could basically live... be financially free and live forever, not have to worry about making money. Which, this was a starting point. On the road, I realized that, wait, even if I reach that number, I'm still going to work because I like working and I'm probably still going to make money. So it's a more complicated discussion if we go into it. But on the surface, that's how I got to the $1 million goal. And I set it first time when I was 27. I went very hard into it. I started streaming. I got sponsors. And I think the first month I made $23,000, something like that. I was on fire. But then I burned out. And after like half a year or so, I kind of not necessarily quit the challenge, but I wasn't very public about it anymore because I didn't know. Honestly, I didn't think I could finish it in time. I mean, I knew I could make $1 million, but it was more than like just 3 years, you know. So I kind of gave up on the challenge back then. But then after I turned 30, I was like, So the 1 million goal wasn't the problem. Like the amount wasn't the problem. The problem was the deadline. I set a too short deadline. I kind of forced myself to think. But the issue was that I was thinking of all these crazy ideas of how I can make money fast. And as you probably know, it's not the best way to think about it. Sure, it's possible, but it's not the best way to force yourself to find quick ways of making lots of money, you know? It's kind of sounds like a scam. But yeah. But then when I turned 30, I was like, what if I set this goal and I give myself a decade to do it? So I'll be financially independent by the time I reach 40. This gives me 10 years to be able to try many things. And in 10 years, even if I make 100,000 per year, it's still very doable. It's not like I'm chasing crazy ideas and stuff like that. So then I kind of restarted, and now this time I built the grid, I made it public. People could, like, every day they can go on my website, see how much money I have, every month how much money I made, what the sources are, and stuff like that. So, yeah, that's the short story. Short kind
I
of
love
story.
I love it, Florian. Yeah. So, because I'll ask this question because it's reminded me when I set the $1 million challenge, when I saw my friend publish it, I remember the feeling is exciting and fear.
Yeah.
And also exactly. A little bit.
Yeah, it's a mix.
A little bit like not very confident or like not very comfortable to talk about it because it seems like, oh, wow, that's so ambitious to reach. But if I'd flip my mind to a corp designer, or like if you work in a corp as an employee, that's the money you got for working in that company for 20 years, 30 years. Like you eventually got it. But it's just feel, okay, it's your own responsibility, or like this is your goal, this is your journey, and it's not like, okay, you work for someone. So that make me fear, and that may be not comfortable to talk about it. So I was quite curious, like, why you set it public? Because some people might just, I will got 1 million, but I would like to do that like privately without talking to anyone, or maybe just some close friend. But you make it public, and you make the progress is visible for everyone. What was the drive?
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio.
Apply, app only. For you to do that.
I guess this, it's more about how I am, like how's my personality, you know? I like to be open about my life, and I like to, I'm not just that I like it. I sometimes need to have people be with me on my journey. I get fueled by getting likes and comments and people cheering me up, you know? And it's probably, I mean, not probably, it's like not everyone is built this way, but I am kind of built this way where I need people to cheer me up along the way. So that's one thing. And another thing is accountability. So when I set a challenge public, you know, when I start a challenge in the public, then I'm kind of forced to keep going, you know, even when the things are hard. And it's a double-edged sword because it also burns me out sometimes, you know, because I pushed myself too hard. which I still try to understand what's happening underneath, you know, in the back of my brain, what's happening there. Because I have periods in my life where I can push really hard and I build lots of projects and I make lots of money. But then I have months where I can't do anything. I just can't focus on working and stuff like that. So it's kind of a roller coaster. And I try to understand what's happening. Hence why also I give myself like 10 years to complete this challenge this time, because I knew from experience that I'm not, like, for example, compared to my wife. My wife is very constant. Like, she goes to work, she's a dentist, so she goes to work every day, she does her job every single day, kind of the same, like, rhythm, in increasing, you know, like, she works, she earns more every, like, with time, you know? But me, I'm like, very high the period and then very, very low, you know, and it's kind of a roller coaster. So yeah, we're different and I'm trying to accept this. I have a hard time sometimes to accept it. But yeah, it's the way I'm wired and I'm just going with it as much as I can.
Yeah, awesome. Because that's just reminding me the topic you mentioned, the 5K sprint. And the long run, like half marathon or a full marathon, it's like two types of doing things. And you can do it like really fast, but could be more likely to burn out. And the other way is to do that for the longer term and get it properly done, and also spend some proper time to prepare for it. Because when I did my $1,000 challenge, like in 20 hours, I noticed that because the time is limited and the options also, they are limited as well.
Yeah.
Because I know that if I can spend some proper time to build the fundamental stuff, and I could get, definitely I can get more outcome, like a higher outcome, like expected outcome. But just because the time is limited, I can just, oh, I can't do that. Let's just maybe got some quick money or like, like just 2 hours, okay, get a showcase or get a consultant stuff or like get it done. And yeah, and it's more like not able to build things properly in the very beginning. And because it's not like a growth like with that compound effort. It's more like here and there do something. But yeah, once the time is taking longer than expected, that could be like that will the magic will happen. So yeah, I think the first time you did, and also thanks for sharing that. Because I just saw that you did twice. I just know that before I thought, okay, that's the time. Seems Florian got really know what he's doing, but it seems when you talk about that, I know. Okay, you've done it first, and it's got not as you expected, and then you did the second time. So it's awesome to know that, because now I think many people will have similar experience or like would be good to know the first time could be a learning experience. It's not not perfect. Yeah. And I noticed that you because you also shared the things around the indie hacking stuff you're doing, like those projects those things you started to work on. I want to know how do you decide like what the projects to be built and to test? And for first, it might be based on your curiosity or something, but I want to know, is there anything like you might maybe have a list or something what's your approach on that?
So first, when I start working on the project, is coming from a random idea that I'm having, you know. For example, many times I was out running and I had an idea of a project. Then I go home and the first thing I do is write down a list of the main features of the project, like the MVP. I focus solely on the MVP. Sure, my brain starts to wander around and I have like it starts to build this full project with all the features and stuff like that. But I force myself to focus on one feature or two features that are core to the MVP. Then I go on to build it. And in this, during this time, I also tease it on X, right? I start to post about it, like, I have this idea, what do you think? Or when I first work on it, I have like a screen or something. I put a screenshot in a tweet and I show people. Mm-hmm. And once I have the MVP, I do a soft launch, right? Where I connect it to a domain name and I post it online and see how many people like react to it and how people like it. If mm-hmm. this is something people enjoy and use and even pay, although I know I should be doing this, but not always I have like a payment set up in the beginning, you know, because that's a bit trickier to set up, especially I'm mostly a front-end developer. The back-end is a bit scary to me sometimes. I have a friend mm-hmm. helping me with that. But yeah, I launched the idea and I see how people interact with it. If I see that they're interested in it, then I double down and I build more features and I redesign it and I rethink it and stuff like that. If mm-hmm. not, then I'll just move on to another idea. That's mm-hmm. sort of, I have a sort of a threshold to that, you know? So I don't spend too much, I don't like spending too much time working on a project before I launch anything. You know, hmm. I can't even do that, you know, because I'm very excited to talk about it. So whenever I have an idea, I already start to talk about it, you know. But yeah, that's been working very well. Like, it kind of forces me to move on fast. It doesn't allow me to spend too much time on a project and then end up not working, you know. I don't want to waste my time that way. I'd rather be working on something that I know people want and need.
Mm.
Yeah.
Do you have the average threshold time, like, for example, 3 days or a week or sometime? Like, if you haven't got what you expected, you'll move on. Do you have that mm-hmm. time, like, as the estimate time for?
It's not something, like, precise, like 2 days, 3 days, something like that. No. But as fast as possible. So my goal with MVP is to build it as fast as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Even like sometimes I even went into like 1 day, 2 days of building a small project just to put it out there and see how people react. Then I make a tweet. I work on having a post that is very interactive and engaging and with the video that works well and with a link. And I wait to see how people interact to it. Then I also put, so because like maybe the first post doesn't go very well. So then I try to like show different angles, like, look, I have this, I could be doing this as well. I have this idea as well. What do you think? And I try to engage with my community to kind of figure out if there is something. And if I don't, like sometimes also going with the vibe, like if I don't feel like there's something there, I move on. Also, another thing that I noticed that it's good is to build projects that help you first. Like, for example, in the beginning of the year, I wanted to track my time and to see how much time I work on different projects. So I built a time tracker that I used a lot, you know?
Yep.
And while working on it, I keep sharing about it. Hey, look, today I tracked 4 hours with my tool. Check it out. And I had hundreds of people I had hundreds of people join and try the product just by me sharing that I've been working on it, you know. And they started using it, and they gave me feedback on how to improve it. That was very cool.
Mm. Right. It seems to me that you are using social media, YouTube, or post or on Twitter to validate some ideas,
yes.
And it seems works quite well. And after people show some interest, it seems that, okay, that's the green flag. You move on or like invest more time and effort on that. Yeah,
yes.
That sounds really good to combine your role as a content creator and indie hacker together. But after...
I just wanted to note something here because... So in my case, I already have an audience. It's very important to know that because that's helpful. I can't deny that. You know, I have hundreds of people following, hundreds of thousands of people following me. So whenever I put something out, it has a higher chance of being seen by people, you know?
Yeah.
If someone is starting out from the beginning, it might be harder to get feedback instantly, you know? So what I recommend to them is to find communities. So for example, you want to build a time tracking app, right? Find communities on Reddit or on X or on Facebook groups or whatever, forums or whatever. Find communities that you think could use your tool and post it there. Be careful because especially on Reddit, you can't really promote too much because they'll ban you and stuff like that. So try to create a story around it. Wrap the launch into a story. So this is why I built this. It helped me this way. And I think it could help you too. Something like that, you know. And that's how I would validate an idea. There's another another thing I've heard many times. I haven't done it yet, but I think could work as well. Is you could pay ads to get people to try out your tool. So for example, Facebook ads. You could do that and see, I don't know, put $10, $20, whatever, I don't know how much it cost, and get hundreds of people to check out your website and see if they sign up, you know? And that way you can validate an idea as well. So just wanted to have this because I feel like it's important to people to know that.
I
have a bit of an advantage, which didn't come for free. So I wasn't born with 400,000 followers, you know? I built it over the years. But now that I have it, it helps me to kind of filters out an idea very fast, you know? Because I post it to them, they don't like it. The chances of other people who don't know me liking it, it's maybe a bit smaller, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome. Because it's the effort you put before now becomes the unfair advantage that you can use for this indie hacking journey. So it's definitely helpful. And also, what's the next step after you move on from MVP step when you, for example, the content creation? Now, does it direct drive the revenue for your project, or is it more about branding and community?
This is a good question. I think it's a mix. When you have an audience, you definitely have your core audience. Like you have the group of people who really like you and engage with all your posts and try out all your tools and stuff like that. And then you have the casual followers who followed you because they liked one of your posts, but they don't really know everything about you, you know? So I think the bigger fans, or if I could call them that way, they interact with it and they try it and they give you valuable feedback, you know? And then it kind of spreads. And what I've been doing as well is that once I have a group of core members, like users that use the app, I reach out to them and I ask them, hey, how do you like the app? What would you like me to do next? What is your need, right? And this way I get valuable feedback of people who actually use the app, not just because there's another thing that going on social media, which I've seen many times. For example, you could, I did in the past a poll where I asked people, would you pay for X? And they were like, yes, I would. Yes, yes, of course. Do it, build it and stuff like that. But when it came time to actually put their money where their mouth was, they didn't do it, you know? It was a very low percentage of people who did it. So I changed my approach. Instead of doing that, I launch it. And when I see someone who even pays for the product, so of course, maybe there are someone who like use it a lot. That's also valuable feedback. But if someone is willing to pay for your product, then that's where like the gold lies, right? Because you know that you need more people like the person, right? You need more people who pay for your product. So their feedback, in my opinion, could be even more valuable because they're willing to put their money where their mouth is, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome. A question about that, because you mentioned that the survey of things, you ask people, are they willing to pay? And what they actually, are they willing to pay actually is quite different. I thought that's really good that you mentioned it. And also you have this approach to test it or to validate, are the people really going to pay for that? Do you have anything relevant to the, for example, the pricing or like the business strategy regards to a product? And do you do that in the very early stage or what's your approach on decide is this a valuable business to or valuable product to build, regards to that? Yeah.
Yeah. So when it comes to pricing, I found that it's mostly about psychology. So pricing is mostly about psychology. Because mm-hmm. if you think about it, sometimes we pay $1 for a bottle of water. I mean, of course, depends on where you are in the world, but let's just say that $1 for a bottle of water is the cheapest one. Let's just have that in mind, okay? So you pay $1 in a supermarket maybe. But then if you go out to lunch, then that the exact same bottle of water is like $2. And you pay it because you're there with a friend and you have lunch and you don't think about that, okay, it's double. Or if you go to the airport, it's $4 now. And it's the same bottle of water, right? And you still pay for it because you're thirsty, because maybe you go on a vacation, you want to relax, and you don't care about the fact that it's four times the price, right? So why is that, right? Isn't it all psychology and it's about the location and all. So it's not something scientific, not necessarily scientific, maybe that's not the right word. It's not an exact science. I think that's what I mean. So everywhere in the world, the one bottle of water is $1. No, it depends on the context and it depends on the feeling of the people and stuff like that. So I came to realize the same thing happens in business and in SaaS and in all of that, right? And you can know for sure. So you can't say, for example, for my time tracking app, I didn't know how much people are willing to pay for it. So you have to experiment, right? Of course, you need to know your expenses. So that's obviously important. And then how much you put on top of it. It's relative. Like, it depends who you're addressing to, right? Are you talking to the average Joe, or are you talking to CEOs, or, you know, that also depends and it comes into the pricing. So for me, for the apps I had so far, it was all about experimenting. I was setting a price and then I was letting that price be live for a month or so. And then I was changing it and see how the conversion is, you know. And of course, it helps a lot to look at the competitors and see how much they are charging for it, and how are your features compared to them. And it's a lot of trial and error, to be honest. I'm not sure someone knows for sure how much to charge for something. You know, it's a lot of randomness into it, which don't know who knows exactly. So that's what I've learned so far in this.
Mm. Yeah, I feel that pricing is really a experienced skill. And also before I did some projects before, when I worked in a corp, it's not my territory. I don't need to worry about that. There will be a marketing team. There will be a business team working on that. And now when I started my own stuff, I will need to think carefully. And it's also it's not that simple. It's actually quite complicated. It's many of time you might need to, it's not just the cost and then add a little bit of your margin. It's not like that, especially for software or for this. There are lots of workloads you don't know before you do. That's actually take more time or effort, and it could be quite easy if you get a higher price or a proper price, and then the total outcome, the total revenue will be much better than a lower one. So that's the reason I feel it's more like a a learning experience. But you shared something more around the use the experimental attitude, like, okay, let's try it and see the result and then change a little bit. I like that. So it's also quite flexible because work on those independent projects, it's more like a quite flexible to experiment. It's not that rigid, like, oh, if we set a price and doesn't make sense, and you can't change it. So yeah. Florian, I noticed that we talked almost 1 hour and 10 minutes. I don't want to take too much of your time. So maybe we have two questions. I still have a lot to share. Maybe we can do another one. But yeah, for today, I think it would be good to know, because now it's quite different from what you started a few years ago.
Like back in 2019, remote working was not a thing. And yes. there was no AI, and the environment haven't changed like now. So if someone is just starting today and maybe he or she doesn't have any following audience, and also just thought, okay, I want to do something for myself, and I want to start this on a journey, and what would you suggest for the first step? And and if you do that, maybe if you do that from scratch, what would you do differently this time? Yeah, it seems like two questions, but yeah, I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, sure. So what I would do is to make a list of people who are, so figure out what you want to do, like where you want to be, and make a list of people who are already there and see what they do, right? See what they do. Try to find, especially like on X and people on X, they are kind of open publicly. I think not everyone, but like most of them are open and they share their journey. Try to find, dig deeper into how they started, what they did when they started, and try to find if there's some kind of a pattern that you could follow. And most important, so this is kind of like the research part, the knowledge part, but most importantly is just do it. Like do something, anything, and you will learn by doing it, you know? Because you could spend so much time trying to think about it and make a plan and learning about it, but without actually applying, you won't get anywhere, you know? So just start doing it. I think right now, the time we're talking, if you want to build an audience, video is king, I think, right now, especially on TikTok and Instagram and YouTube Shorts. And YouTube, obviously, is the best platform to grow an audience there. And if you want to do written, which I did, for me personally, written is easier because you just write, it's easier to edit, it's easier, it's faster, you can get your idea faster out there. X is a great platform. There have been many, so I've been on X since 2019, so that's like over 6 years now. And I've seen many apps try to come and say they're the X killer, Twitter killer, whatever, you know, and none did it, you know, and X is more powerful than ever now. So if you want to go there as well to grow an audience, you can do that. I've seen many people in the last year grew from zero followers to thousands of followers, and they all did this, build in public. Like, they shared their journey. They're very extrovert, of course, that helped. They're very charismatic, so that helps as well. But put yourself out there. I mean, of course, it depends on what type of person you are, and also important, it depends of like who do you want to reach, right? Because, for example, if you want to reach farmers, I don't know, you have a business idea for farmers, maybe they're not on Twitter, so you shouldn't be on Twitter, right? You should be where they are. You should figure out what kind of channels they're using, where they, what kind of entertainment videos they're watching, and you should be there doing creating content for them, you know. So yeah, that's what I've been doing as well. I've been trying many things. And when you try things and when you notice something happening, so like, for example, you put out 100 posts and 2-3 posts, they go well, like they spark something, try to figure out why they did that, right? And double down on the things that work. For example, for my YouTube channel, I told you that I had a video, 10 projects in 10 hours, that doubled my channel. Guess what? The next video was 10 projects in 1 hour, something like that. I tried to figure out other formats that were very similar. And those videos did well as well, you know? So, yeah, that's what I would do. Try out many things. And whenever you find something that works, try to double down on it. Try to understand why did it work. And
That's so good. That's so good for anyone who just about to start their own journey. And also, yeah, just do it and try different options and find the right one and then double it down. Like not all in, but at least make double the effort, double the time.
Yeah.
I love it.
Exactly. Yeah. It's all about experimenting.
Yeah. Last question about your $1 million journey. So now I see you already got, you already got 105K for this journey. So pretty much like 10% is completed. So, how do you see this evolving in this year and next year? Like, do you have any plan or like anything can be shared on that?
Yeah. To be honest, I don't know. So a big part of my 100K so far was me exiting the project I told you I sold. You know, it was 50K exit plus the money the project made so far. Plus I had a YouTube like a Udemy course, and what I started doing consulting on the side just to try new things. And to be honest, I don't know my next project. I'm still trying to figure out. I'll be doing what I've said so far. I'll be experimenting, and whenever I find the next idea that works well, like the project I sold did, I'll be doubling down on it. So the good thing about this is that I have plenty of time to experiment. I am very fortunate to have some money saved up, so I'm not in a rush to find something urgently, you know, which gives me time to experiment. It gives me time to find new ideas, to collaborate. I'm also looking to maybe collaborate with other people to maybe help them. So I'm very good on the marketing side, like on the content creation side. Maybe I can find someone who already has a project, but they're not very keen to like talk about it. And yeah, I'm open to many things. I also have sponsors, obviously having a YouTube channel and audience. I have sponsors in the pipeline who want to collaborate with me. And that will be in the foreseeable future. That will be my main income stream, I think. Maybe some consulting along the way. And during this time, I'll continue to build projects, share them, and see which one stands out. And when I find something that stands out, I'll be doubling down.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, that's thanks so much, Florin, for this sharing. As mentioned, I reached out because I was inspired by your project. But after this conversation, I also find something quite learned a lot and lots of insights, and also validated some of my assumptions. So yeah, thanks again for sharing that. And for the people who's listening, I will share the show notes and also where to find Florin Pop. Check his website. This cool $1 million grid. You'll love it. And also his tweet and other social media channel. I'll share later. So. Thanks, Florin, again, for sharing this one. And probably we can do something later around content creation or other topics. But yeah.
Sure.
Are there anything you want to say at the end to the audience or to anyone?
Yeah. Thanks for having me. It was very fun. When you're very involved in your day-to-day life, you kind of forget the journey that brought you to where you are. So you kind of start to have imposter syndrome, and you kind of you deal with all the things in the moment. You kind of forget all the things you did in the past. So this was a nice reminder that it's good to look back and be happy and be proud of the things that you did in the past. So thanks for kind of helping me step back a bit from my day-to-day grind to realize that. And yeah, for all of those who are listening, I'm on X, I'm on YouTube, and feel free to DM me. You can find my email on the website if you want to discuss anything. I'm happy to help and whenever I can. So yeah, and thanks again for having me. It was very fun.
Yeah, likewise. And all the best to your $1 million journey, $1 million journey, and your runner's journey. Right. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks,
Lauren.
如果您喜欢这档节目，请在苹果的 Podcasts 上留言与评分，让更多人发现这个节目。如果您使用 Twitter， 也就是 X， 那么也请关注我的账号 Bear 刘，来聊一聊您的想法，分享您的故事。感谢您的收听，我们下期节目见。
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.